Hey everyone, it is Sean, and we are here today on June 15th with the Honorable Charlie Bailey running for Lieutenant Governor. So you don't want to miss this conversation. Stay tuned. People are dying because they're waiting on us. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You guys, we are back with Mr. Bailey, and we had you on last year. So let's, I don't much want to waste time. Let's jump right into it. Last year when I had you on the podcast, you were actually running for Attorney General for the state of Georgia.
That's right.
And now you're currently running for Lieutenant Governor.
That's right.
Why the switch?
So I got a call in early December from some leaders in the party, in the Democratic Party, asking me to consider moving over to the Lieutenant Governor's race. And the argument they made was things that I could bring in particular to the statewide ticket, proven statewide nominee, you know, ran 4 years ago, got 49% mm-hmm. of the vote, the highest vote share of any down ballot statewide Democrat, ability, and that was against an incumbent with Republicans spending $3.3 million to beat me. That kind of proven track record, plus respect to somebody from outside of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I'm originally, as you know, from Harris County, Georgia, rural West Georgia, bringing that kind of perspective to the top of the ticket. Because, you know, half the vote in the general election is Metro Atlanta, half of it's outside.
Right.
And when we talk about building one Georgia, you know, we got to be in every community, building faith and trust in the community. So that I could bring, and also, as we talked about extensively, my background in public safety and in criminal justice, and that those things were needed in the Lieutenant Governor slot, and the issues that I had been campaigning on in 2018 and last year, whether it's people's right to health care, environmental justice, justice in the criminal justice system, and equal safety, I could work on all those things from the same way. We'd just be working on it at Lieutenant Governor more in tandem with the Governor Stacey Abrams, whose endorsement I have earned, and also working on it from the budgetary policy perspective as opposed to implementation. So, you know, I talked to the people close to me and my family over Christmas, considered all the options, and made the best decision I thought both for me and my family, also the best decision for the party and the people of Georgia. You know, and I worked for the last Democratic Lieutenant Governor, Mark Taylor. Last time we've had a Lieutenant Governor that cared about working people at all. So I know what can be done from that office when you've got somebody there that knows how to use the law to get people justice and cares about getting people justice.
So, you know, the funny thing, one thing I think is always amazing when I have these conversations is I don't think people understand, like, what the position in details, right? I met with Fred Swan last year, and he was talking about the agriculture and explaining, like, in detail what all they do. And even Miss Farley, mm-hmm. who ran
sure.
for, yeah, mm-hmm. she was here too. And even after she lost the election, she still came and she just talked about the importance of the position, right? What is it that you can do as Lieutenant Governor that most people who are regular Georgia citizens have no idea that sits in the power of the Lieutenant Governor?
So the Lieutenant Governor's got two kind of hats. One is the executive powers that the Lieutenant Governor has. If the governor can't be at a particular event, do something on behalf of the state, you stand in for the governor. If the governor leaves office for any reason, God forbid passes away or runs for another office, you become the governor. You also have appointments to state boards and commissions that carry out the policies of the governor and the state government. So that's the executive role. The legislative role, though, is probably the more powerful one, and maybe the one your listeners are a little bit more used to have some familiarity with. You're the president of the state senate, akin to the House Speaker in the state house. You decide who sits on what committee. You decide who chairs what committee. You decide what committee a bill goes to once it is filed. A recent example of that is the current Lieutenant Governor, Jeff Duncan, who's not running again. When the Buckhead Cityhood bills were filed, he actually, even though he's a Republican, was against that. So he took Buckhead Cityhood bill and he put it in the Urban Affairs Committee. Well, the Urban Affairs Committee has only Democrats on it. He effectively killed the bill. That's the power of the Lieutenant Governor, to stop bad legislation or promote good legislation like Medicaid expansion, for instance, through the legislative process, to shepherd it, you know, both. And then you can't, you know, you can't yourself as Lieutenant Governor sponsor bills,
right,
but the Lieutenant Governor's agenda that will be sponsored through floor leaders, it's about making law, changing law in a way, in my perspective, that gets justice for people and that gives more safety and opportunity.
So if you are, if you get the nomination and if you win to become the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Georgia, what are some of the things that you would do? As everybody said, their first 90 days, everybody has their first 90 days. Right. What are some of the things that you would do in the first 90 days that you find is lacking in that position now?
First priority is expand Medicaid.
Absolutely.
We've got over 600,000 Georgians that don't have health care coverage. We've had 8 rural hospitals close over the last 10 years because of the Republicans' abject moral failing not to expand Medicaid. And we're family, so let's just talk honestly. It is all because it was a black president's idea.
Right.
That's what the political opposition is. And by the way, and your listeners should know, we're already paying for it. We're just paying for our brothers and sisters in Indiana, in California, Ohio, New York to have health care. Because we're spending all our federal tax dollars for it, but we're not accepting the federal tax dollars. The most insane thing is the single biggest economic development engine we could start. You're talking tens of thousands of new jobs and billions with a B in money coming into the state to get people health care and reduce health care costs for other folks. So that's, you asked for several things. That's the number one. And that's Stacey Abrams' number one priority. It means it's going to be my number one priority, but I also agree with her that it is. I would say secondly is on education. And just not, I think within the hour, it was announced that I received the endorsement of the Georgia Association of Educators, which is the largest teachers union in the state. And that's because of my commitment to pay teachers like the professionals that they are.
Right.
I think Leader Abrams just unveiled a plan, which I wholeheartedly support, to bring the base pay up to $50,000. And that's what people, let that sink in. It's not even there yet for our teachers. But I think eventually we ought to be paying our teachers $70,000-$80,000 a year. Now, we're not going to do that in the first session or the first two sessions, but that's where we need to be getting to. And we need to hire a lot more teachers so we can reduce class sizes. I'm not an expert on education, but the reason I'm endorsed by the Georgia Association of Educators is that I listen to the experts in education. And what they say is that you get a good teacher in a small class, and that is the best shot those kids have, kind of educational opportunity they need to build a better life for themselves.
So one of the things that has been very interesting, when we talk about education, we know that we are dealing with, we're only 3 weeks out from Uvalde, Texas, right? And there's been a lot of discussion about what we need to do, arming teachers. We know Georgia passed a bill that allows people to openly carry in the state of Georgia. Where are you at? Like, when it comes to gun control, what can we do as a state of Georgia? Forget about the United States, but right now, even as a state in Georgia, because I have friends who are teachers. I have a friend who was a principal, and she said that she wouldn't know like how she feels having her teachers walking into a classroom with a gun. Around kids, right? What is some of the things that you feel like we can do to kind of curb back some of the violence? We know in Atlanta, violence has spiked in Atlanta, crime has spiked in Atlanta. And a lot of them have been getting gun charges, gun-related charges, and kids are getting access to guns. What are some of the things that you feel like you guys can do or you can do to help curb that trend?
Something's broken in our country, and it is this violence and much of it is gun violence. And it all comes from a place of folks either refusing to, not acknowledging the humanity in each of us, that common humanity we share, that every person's a human being. They got people that love them, that need them. And something's broken in our country where we don't recognize that, and it spills out into, you know, gun violence that's wrecking our communities. You know, in Canada, for instance, they've got the same percentage of people that have, you know, mental health, psychological challenges. They got schools too. They've had in the last 15 years, three school shootings. We've had over 200. The difference is the ease of access to very, very dangerous weapons that have no business on our streets. The AR-15 was built for the military. Functionally, it's really no different than the M4, which is the standard issue in our military. The only difference is the M4 can switch to a three burst, which they call automatic fire. It's not that different. And most of the time when the military is trained and they've got that weapon, they're not on fully automatic.
Right. So
it's a military weapon. It is a machine gun. And we banned these machine guns in 1994. And for 10 years, they were banned. I think we need to ban them.
Absolutely.
And I think we need to have a voluntary buyback. So you can bring yours in, and we're going to pay for it, then we're going to destroy it. And we need to ban the production going forward, and we need to ban these high-capacity magazines. I, as an organized crime prosecutor in Fulton, I had multiple drive-by shooting cases where when we got the guns, when we found, you know, there would be a chase normally, a crash normally, and then in the cars you find 9mm with 50-round drums on 45s with 50-round drums on the bottom. Now, that is just to kill as many people as you can, to harm as many people as you can. There is no place in a civil society for those kinds of weapons of war. So we need to ban those. We also need to implement red flag laws.
Absolutely, yeah.
That allow for, you know, due process. So, you know, law enforcement or family members can present to a judge the evidence of our loved one or this person is a danger to themselves or others. Get the evidence, the judge makes a decision to take away the guns. We need universal background checks. Right now, any criminal, any murderer can go to a gun show and buy as many weapons as they want without a background check at all. That's insane. And so we need universal background checks. We need to repeal this criminal carry law that makes law enforcement less safe and allows for people that shouldn't have guns to be able to openly carry them in our state. And the last thing I would say is the state law that the right-wing Republicans have in place right now is that when police departments, you know, collect guns from shootings and murders, by law, they have to put those back in the market. So someone murders somebody, the gun, that the murder weapon, after it's done through evidence and everything, they have to return it to the market. That is a state law. That's insane to me, and it doesn't have anything to do with protecting human beings. It has everything to do with protecting the profits of the gun manufacturers. And maybe I'm naive, but I don't think if you're trying to be a leader of the state, that the profits of gun manufacturers matter more than
people's lives. Yeah, I agree. One of the things too that is very hot topic in Georgia. So I tell everybody, like, Georgia's the melting pot. Everybody's looking to Georgia for this election season. One of the things that we know is that after the last election, even after we put in office the first black senator from the state of Georgia and the first Jew from the state of Georgia, somehow the state of Georgia determined that we don't need to vote, or certain communities don't need that much access to voting. SB 202 was like the kickoff for the whole country doing different kind of laws that actually limit our voting when they call it voter protection. What are some of the things that you can do as Lieutenant Governor to kind of roll that back and allow people to have trust in our system again?
Right. Well, we need to repeal SB 202. And there's some parts of it that are worse than others. But we need to be, but I'll fight and use every legislative tool I have and every bit of leverage I have to get it repealed, or at the very least get the worst parts of it repealed. I have a sneaking suspicion that by the time this general election happens, Republicans are going to end up hurting as many of their people as they're hurting of our voters with these draconian restrictions they put on. And so I think we might be able to get some Republicans on board. Now, I need 6 Republican votes in the state Senate. Democrats will likely win back one state Senate seat, but that'll leave us still with a 60 deficit. So we'll have to get Republican votes for this. I think we'll be able to make an argument on that. You know, the right to vote is a right. It is not a privilege.
Right.
And as a citizen, we ought to be making it easier for folks to vote. You know, you run elections, you know, and sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. I've lost a close statewide election. I got 49%. That's the way it goes. You don't come in then and try to punish the voters and make it harder for them to exercise their constitutional right to vote. So I believe in automatic registration at 18. If you can't get that, same day registration for when folks go to vote. Opening up the absentee balloting process to make it easier to get a ballot. Expanding drop boxes so it's easier for people to use it. I mean, basically, everything they did, going back to, you know, one of the things they changed that's most insidious in the SB 202 is it used to be if you show up on election day at your precinct and they've got you down, well, no, you're supposed to be at another precinct. That happens sometimes. It's actually happened to me. Well, you used to be able to cast a provisional, and then they go check on the system, and as long as everything checks out and you register to vote, vote counts. Not anymore. You have to go to the precinct they tell you to go to. And some people, you know, they carved out, they waited at the end of the day, they only have so much time, they can't get to a moment. Or they came during lunch and that's the time they had.
Right.
And they don't get time off, you know, from work. So anyway, we need to, and I will use every bit of legislative power I have to repeal SB 202 and at the very least some of the Mr. Cronin.
You know, one of the things I hear a lot from people who are voters is that they are tired of politics as usual, right? They feel like the two sides can't really talk to each other without hearing each other. And they feel like politics is broken, like politics has forgotten the purpose of what it was designed to be, and politicians have forgotten the purpose of why they were elected into office. What are some of the things that you feel like you can do to actually bring both sides together, Democrats and Republicans, around issues that we probably, and a lot of issues we agree on.
Yeah.
The crazy part is just that because of the fact that a Democrat presents it or a Republican presents it, we kind of back off. And Obamacare the Affordable Care Act was a perfect example of that, right? The mandate that was put in there was actually put in, and I think it was Mitt Romney when he was the governor.
Mitt Romney did the exact same thing in Massachusetts.
So Massachusetts. And then all of a sudden became like this big thing, like, no, we can't have it, right? What are some things that you think? How are you a unifier, and how can you unify this state?
So I think I'm generally a nice guy.
You, and I will say that for the record, you are. You even offered to pay for our lunch that one time. Yeah. So.
I mean, I can be tough when needed. I mean, I've tried cases. I've gotten justice for people, and I've stood up for folks who needed somebody to stand up for them. But I think I listen. I'll give anybody a shot, you know, and I'm not giving up on the fact that we can get some Republican votes for some of these issues. Now, the one thing about Georgia, it makes us a little bit interesting. So let's play this out. Let's say in this hypothetical, Stacey Abrams becomes governor. She wins that race. I win both the runoff on June 21st and the general election in November. The Republicans are going to, we're going to gain seats, but they're going to retain control of the state house and the state senate. Well, two things. One, the governor's got a line item veto. That's something the president doesn't have. That means they pass a budget, which the General Assembly's got to do, the House and the Senate. But she can go in and strike out parts that she doesn't want. There's nothing they can do about it. That gives her and me a lot of leverage. But in Georgia, you have to pass a balanced budget, different than the federal government. What that means is there's going to force some working together.
Right.
Or the government will shut down. And nobody wants that. You know, Speaker Ralston and the Republicans don't want that. We don't want that. And so because of the way it's structured in Georgia, I think there's actually reason to be optimistic that there can be some compromise. Now, it's not going to be all like kumbaya.
they're just going
to agree with everything we want to do. No. But there are compromises, I think, to be had. And I start from the position of let me sit across the table from the state senator. Maybe they're from a rural part of the state as I am. And so, you know, a lot of the people we know kind of think alike. Let me listen to you. Tell me what it is that your constituents are worried about. And then I can give them information about, you know, well, look, we've done this study, and this is how many constituents will get health care if we get Medicaid expansion. That hospital that closed in your district that employed 2,000 of your constituents, we could get that reopened. What would that mean? You know, you'd be able to stand there with and cut the ribbon, you know, and you can say you brought that to your district. You have those individual conversations. You don't presuppose that someone's going to be against you because they're of a different party. You give people a chance. And the last thing I'll say, and I know I talked too long. You ask a question, I talk for like 5 minutes, but let's not get it twisted. If there are Republicans that stand against an agenda that I think is providing help for working people, equal safety and equal justice and equal opportunity, and they stand against that, mark my words, Sean, I will raise more money for Democrats running for the state Senate 2 years from now than has ever been raised in the history of the state. And we'll go out and beat those people that stood against the agenda for working folks. So I'm not going to be a pushover, but I'm not going to presuppose bad faith.
Right. One of the things that I found extremely interesting about you, and I remember in the last conversation we had, I asked you the question, how do you keep yourself humble? And you said that it's like your family, I think at the time, your girlfriend, like, kind of keeps you mellowed out.
Yeah.
And I could imagine now, even running for this office now, just let people know, like, the toll, like, it does take a toll. It's demanding, and not in a toll in a bad way, but, like, the sacrifice you have to do in order to be in public service, right? Every detail of your life has to be scrutinized. Every comment you say, you can mean it one way, you still put one at one wrong word, it has to be adjusted. For those young people who are out there who see themselves in the Charlie Baylor or see themselves in the Stacey Abrams, what would be your message to them? What are we going to do to really make an impact to our youth under y'all administration? Because hopefully, if you win, more than likely Stacey wins too in the general. So what would be the platform for our youth to kind of re-get them back on board? Because we see our youth are dying at a higher rate than anybody else across the country.
I think it is incumbent upon us to give young people hope. I mean, that is the thing that keeps any human being going.
Right.
Is the hope of a better day, the hope of an ability to build a better life. And there is a lot that we can do. And while also saying, as Senator Warnock says, you know, I'm a pastor, I'm a United States Senator, I'm a father. A magician I am not. In 1 year in the U.S. Senate, he's not going to reverse
everything.
All the systemic inequalities that exist. It's about making progress. And so I think we got to be honest with the young folks. And I was, you know, young person not that long ago. I'm not yet 40. But be honest with, you know, this isn't going to be easy. It's not going to be instant. It is going to take hard work, and I'll be right there with you every step of the way. I won't leave you. I won't abandon you. And I'll always tell you the truth, but I can't do it without you. This doesn't happen without y'all. Change does not happen anywhere in this country. And it does not happen in this state without young folks standing up and demanding it and being accountable and counted. You know, those things. It's part of the same, you know, root of the same word. They got to be counted. They got to be accountable. And I think delivering that message, that's what's incumbent upon us. And then once we get there, delivering on it, you know, saying, okay, this is the thing we got done. I'm for making technical school tuition free again. It used to be in Georgia. And it's one of the many things that the Republicans have taken away. Well, when we deliver on that promise and we make technical school tuition free again, and we invest in our technical schools the way we invest in my alma mater, you know, University of Georgia, the way we invest in Georgia Tech and Georgia State, when we do that, you know, delivering on that and telling young folks, this is what we got done. We're not stopping, but this is what you get when you stay engaged, and just keeping that conversation going and never give up. Don't ever give up, because if we give up, if I give up, if young folks give up, if you give up, then the forces that don't believe like we do, that everybody is equal and everybody deserves that same dignity and justice and safety, they will win if we give up.
You said something earlier today. You talk about reforming or making sure that the system is fair, right? Make sure it's even. And I'm in the same boat as you. If a person commits a crime, they have to pay for the crime. But if the charge carries 5 years, there's no reason why we should be able to manipulate it to make it 10 years. And we've seen it happen a lot of times in plenty of states. One of the things that I find interesting is that America to me, and this is as an African-American, I have more hope that America had moved past racism. And I think even in the last 2 months, everybody on my team knows, like, I've been really heartbroken because we know that there's been tapes leaked about the peaceful protesters that was in D.C. marching for George Floyd. And there was a conversation that the current president at the time saying, hey, we should just go out and shoot them. But yet we look at January 6th, people who try to destroy our democracy. And every single time I go to D.C., you still feel the weight of what happened last year. How can you speak to that community or my community that literally says, like, you know, we thought we were so far past this point. And now we're getting killed in grocery stores just because of the color of our skin. And I don't think that a lot of people, and it's crazy because I did research. I literally looked up every leader in the Senate and the House, and they recognize Uvalde, but some of them same leaders have never even wished their condolences to the family of Buffalo. And it's just a reminder that we probably have a lot more racism engraved within our communities than we think so. How can you speak to those who are like hurting today and saying, like, you know, what's the point? Why do I need to get out and vote? Because every single time I vote, it seems like their country has turned more left or right on me than what I voted for.
You know, I can't tell anybody how to feel.
Right.
And I won't try. I know I'm a white man, you know, and I know there's some things that I can't understand and I won't experience. What I can try to offer, and of course you know where I stand on these things, and it's very clear in my repudiation of the horror of what happened in Buffalo. And you know, sometimes I get down. Sometimes I get dispirited, thinking and saying that how are we in 2022? Seems in some ways worse than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But it will get worse if we, this ties into what I said earlier, it would guarantee will get worse if we sit down.
Right.
If we give up, it will. That's a guarantee. That's not an opinion, that is a fact. If we don't stand up, if we don't participate, if we don't vote, then the people that think it's okay or think it's not that big of a deal, or think that, you know, these violent white supremacists, they don't need to be investigated, that we don't need to put resources in that, that think it's okay to have these machine guns out in the street and the access available to any, you know, hateful person to act out on their sick fantasies. If we sit down, they will win. If we keep fighting, there's no guarantee that it's going to change next year. But it is a guarantee that over time it will. And all of the people, the giants, the shoulders that we stand on, that chose love over hate, that stood up for justice when it was inconvenient to do so, we would be letting all them down. If we don't, in our time and with our power, with the time that God has given us, if we can't do the same thing, if we can't stand up for the common humanity that we all share, then we've let down people that have sacrificed far more than we have. So there's only one option, and that is to go forward, and it's to keep walking, and it's to keep fighting, and understand that there are more of us than there are of them. There are. People ask me, you know, in a political context, can Democrats win this year? I said, of course we can win. You know, the last time we had a statewide election in this state, we won.
Right.
They didn't win. And, you know, we sent our electoral votes to a Democratic nominee for president for the first time since 1992. We won that, not them. Donald Trump didn't win Georgia. And then we came right back.
Oh, we know.
And then we came right back and elected, as you were talking about, not one, but two phenomenal United States senators that believe like we do in that common humanity that we all share. So don't be dispirited, because we won last time. But for all those people, your listeners and their friends and family and all the people that share the values that we share and that President Biden shares and that Senator Ossoff and Senator Warnock share, because of all those people, Ketanji Brown Jackson is on the United States Supreme Court. That wouldn't happen.
Right.
And so anybody says, well, what does it matter? That's why it matters.
Right.
That's why it matters. And that's just one example, you know? So you have to keep fighting. You have to keep moving forward, because it's the only option.
And, you know, I appreciate you coming on today. There's so much more we could talk about. I know when we had lunch, we talked about a lot of these issues. But one of the things I really want to, I'll leave you with this. I met Ms. Anona Clayton about 3 weeks ago in her office, and we're having this whole discussion. And before I left, she said, baby, do you have any more questions? I said, one more question. And I asked her, I said, how do you think things have changed since the time that you guys were out here and the time that it is now? And her response kind of chilled me, because she said, things haven't changed. They just changed the tactics in which they and how they deal with us. But the feeling of how they feel is still the same. And not talking about everybody, but talking about this good. We just seen the other day, there was an arrest of the Proud Boys, I think it was, by 61 members who were going to break up a pride parade. Really, what country do we live in when we are dipping into everybody else's bedroom and everybody else's house? And definitely for a party that presents itself of being like, let the people decide.
Yeah.
But yet they want to take away every right of the people to decide. One more thing I was curious about. Mm-hmm. So Florida passed a minimum wage increase, changed the way they vote, all because of what they call ballot initiatives, meaning that a citizen ballot initiative, which means that a citizen can get them enough votes and bring an item to the ballot. In Georgia, that's unconstitutional. Would that be something that you would be willing to look at proposing where citizens, because it is not a Democrat or Republican thing, where citizens, if they have an issue that feels like it's ballot worthy, can bring to the ballot, because maybe the minimum wage can come up quicker.
1,000% minimum wage, legalization of recreational use of marijuana.
Ali, calm down over there.
Which is a justice issue, which I'm publicly for. A lot of these issues, and you touched on it earlier, there's actually broad agreement. This is a strange thing. On issues, we've gotten broader agreement over the past 10, 15 years in America and in Georgia. I don't think it's a pox on both your houses. I think one party in particular is a responsible party, disagree with them or not about, you know, issues. One is an authoritarian party. That's where they've gone. So they are the ones that are changing. But while that's happening, on the issues, there's broad agreement. We could pass universal if it was on a ballot in November, we would pass universal background checks this November.
Right.
We would pass a $15 minimum wage this November. So I'm absolutely for that. That's going to take some work because it's in the Constitution. It's going to take some, it's not just the 6 votes we need, but we need to do that. And I think that's better. It's better for democracy. If I can close.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and it's not a Democratic or Republican issue.
No, it's not.
Because a Republican can bring something to the ballot just as much as a Democrat or independent.
Absolutely.
But in closing, I do want you to let people know how they can find out more information about you. Let them know. I think we have your website up here that we can put up. But just in closing remarks.
Yeah. you know, I look to earn every vote that I earn. And you know, obviously y'all have heard me talk about what I believe, what I'm for, what I'm going to fight for. I'll ask you to, you know, stand with me in this election, stand with the people that have endorsed me, like Stacey Abrams and former Mayor Shirley Franklin and Congresswoman Lucy McBath, Congressman Hank Johnson, the AFL-CIO, the Georgia Association of Educators. Stand with us in this election, and I promise you, you will never have to apologize, and you always know my friend Charlie, he fights for us. And you can find us at charlieforgeorgia.com is the website. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Okay. And don't forget, you guys, he is completely right about the one thing. We do need you guys to get out and vote. Early voting has started in Georgia as of today. So I'm going to make sure I'm getting out there tomorrow to vote. But we need you guys to vote. June 21st needs everyone's voice. And then once we're done in June, we got November to go to get pushed through. So let's not get silent. If we want to make change, we have to be the change. And the way we can be the change is by voices who align with what we're looking for. Mr. Bailey, I am appreciative of you coming on. Run your race. Keep running your race.
Get it done.
And I look forward to seeing what comes up of it. One more thing, you guys, as we leave today, we do have a One Accord conference coming to the great city of Macon. We'll be there on June 25th. And this is just a little piece of what to expect when you go to Macon.
To have to speak truth to power.
If we live by what his word says, we're not going to go wrong.
Every human being deserves equal treatment.
If you don't know Vincent's name in your own community, don't call George's name.
Where is the church today?
One is a church, one is a package store. Which one is the greater influence?
We've got to put our foot down and say, as for me and my house, not only will we serve Lord, but we'll look like him.
One Accord is what we need.
Stand up for all of God's children and let's be a one accord.
The thing about unity with God is that it doesn't come without unity with other people.
May the God in all of us stand with those who are the most vulnerable.
I believe the opportunity to be on One Accord is opportunity.
When am I going to stop? I'm going to stop when there's no more homeless people. When am I going to stop? I'm going to stop when people no longer have to be afraid to go into a ballot place and cast their ballot. When my white brothers and sisters don't have to eat from Dollar General and that's where they get their only meal from.